Settle a debate for us. Who comes in second place in the National League West, the Padres or the Diamondbacks? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Thursday, February 27. This is your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock. That's Troy B Baseball on Twitter slash X slash whatever we're calling that nowadays. Send all your friends over to firstpitchpodcast.com so they can get every episode of the show. And this one, we need your help, okay? We have been previewing every division, and typically before the show starts, we are in agreement as to what we think the divisional finish is going to be, our prediction. We're not today. In the National League West, I think everybody assumes the Dodgers are going to win, right? But we're trying to figure out who is more likely to come in second place, the Arizona Diamondbacks or the San Diego Padres. So we're going to preview both teams, and we're going to kind of talk about it. And Troy, we did not decide who goes first. So I think you should probably go first with your San Diego Padres in the previews. Lineup here, really interesting kind of lineup. You lose Ha-Seong Kim out of that lineup. And so you're in a situation now. First base, Luis Arraez. Thank you for putting him at first and not second. He's a terrible defender. Jake Cronenworth goes back to second base. Xander Bogaerts goes back to shortstop. He was moved off of shortstop a year and a half ago. Just barely into that incredibly long extension. Aging super well, it really is. Manny Machado at third. And then your outfield for now, Tatis and Wright, Jackson Merrill in center, zero questions about either one of those guys. They were incredibly valuable last year. Merrill put up over 5 WAR as a first-time center fielder. Insanely impressive. Left field is going to be a combination of Jason Hayward and Connor Joe, which is not a sentence I thought I would be saying about any team in 2025. The catching duo, Elias Diaz and Luis Campusano. And then the rest of your bench is Eggy Rosario and do everything utility man, light hitting speedy Tyler Wade. Before we get to the pitching group, your thoughts on this lineup? Is it one of those where, because to me, I like the top of the lineup. Like I like the first four or five, first four or so names. You've got some big names in here. I don't know how good Xander Bogaerts actually is. And then your bottom three, Jason Hayward, or Connor Joe, Lucas Diaz, DH is Tirso Ornelas. I don't even know who that is. It feels like this is still, you really need your stars to star for this team to hit their ceiling in 2025.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, pretty much like you said, the top half of the lineup is strong, especially with Fernando Tatis Jr., Jackson Merrill, and Manny Machado two through four. And your number five hitter is Jake Cronenworth. And that's a pretty good guy to have.
Baby. He can, I've had him in fantasy the last couple of years. Like I absolutely think he could figure it back out and break back out, but we'll see what happens, right?
Right, exactly. And if you could get Jake Cronenworth to figure it back out, plus Xander Bogaerts, then you have a lineup of 1 through 6 that can pretty much stand up with any other lineup in the National League West as far as depth goes. Because while I'm not big on Luis Arraez, you cannot take away the fact that he is going to hit singles.
He's going to get on base.
He's going to get 1.5 to 2 singles every game. And so there's you can't take that away from him. Fernando Tatis Jr. is going to just do everything at the plate.
What's the main thing that Luis Arraez does?
Why do you like him?
Because he gets on base.
The clarification there is we don't actually like him, but he gets on base. Okay, I just wanted to play the clip because I love it. Go ahead.
Great movie. Favorite movie. Fernando Tatis Jr. does everything. I mean, he's one of the best hitters in baseball. He's one of the best fielders in the outfield in baseball. Jackson Merrill proved that he's one of, if not the best center fielder in baseball in his rookie year, plus his first year ever playing center field. Manny Machado is still one of, if not the best defensive third baseman in baseball. It's the lineup is strong, and I'm not out on Jason Hayward and Connor Joe platooning. I mean, you got two Jason Hayward, you know, a 15-year veteran, former Atlanta Brave, and he's going to be facing only right-handed batters for the most part, and he's you know, serviceable in the outfield defensively. I'm pretty sure, doesn't he have a Gold Glove or two in his career? I think in his time with the Braves, he won one.
Maybe he does. I'm not 100% sure. Jason Hayward's always been a really hard player to kind of evaluate because he's 6'5", 240, but he doesn't really hit for power, right? Like he has two seasons in his career where he broke 20 home runs. And it's just kind of frustrating there. No, he actually has 5 Gold Gloves. He won 2 in Atlanta, and he won 1 in St. Louis and 2 in Chicago. He hasn't won one since 2017, age 27 season, but he does have 5 career Gold Gloves, and he is still considered a good defender. Offensively, that's the question. He hit .211 last year between LA and Houston. Didn't really do much with either team. And so I do kind of question, what does he still have offensively in the tank, especially when you're in that Mike Trout scenario of he's carrying around 240 pounds in the outfield, right? So what does he still have in the tank? But Connor Joe's an underrated guy. He can play first base as well. So you could always, you know, if you have a scenario where Joe's hot, but you need to play Hayward against the handedness platoon, you could always throw Joe at first, Arise at DH, and you don't have to play whatever Tirso Ornelas is. He's an outfielder, apparently, from what I'm reading. He was a minor league outfielder. He hit like .297 in AAA last year, which sounds great, but it's the Pacific Coast League. And I'm pretty sure there's like a team that hit .297. So he's fine. He's not bad, but it's a lot to ask of a guy who's never, I think, played in the majors to come up and be your everyday DH. So this feels like it's going to be a rotate the DH spot around a little bit.
Yeah.
Is it just me, or does this team really feel like they need to add one more player? Like they offensively, lineup wise, this is the team that needs to add one more person. And I feel like if you look at some of their NRIs, they're aware of that. Like they brought in a couple outfielders, but like look at first base. They brought in Gavin Sheets, formerly of the White Sox. They brought in Yuli Gurriel, who spent most time in Atlanta's minor league system last year and then was traded to the Royals and got time for the Royals in September and the postseason. Like they brought in some names of people that we know. Martin Maldonado is in camp with these guys in their eye. Mike Brousseau as a corner infielder and a corner outfielder is in camp. Nico Goodrum is in camp as a middle infielder. Like they brought in a lot of names that we've heard of. It just feels like they need one position player, preferably one of those first basemen, to make the everyday roster. Because if you can move Arise to DH and you're not having to count on Tirso Ornelas as an everyday player, the ceiling of this team does go up a little bit.
Oh, yeah, I 100% agree. And you look at guys like Yuli Gurriel and Gavin Sheets as probably the two most like one of those two are the most likely to do, in fact, that. And that would be go a long way. I think that they should have been. I know they had a lot of front office issues and ownership issues, but I think that they should have been in on Anthony Santander for left field. I think that he would have gone a long way to helping this lineup and making it even deeper than it already can be. But yeah, like Yuli Gurriel or Gavin Sheets has got to be one of those two guys, if not both of them, and put one on the bench over one of their other guys on the bench to make it out of camp. Also, fun fact, NRI, former Atlanta Brave Forrest Wall.
Yeah. Shout out Forrest Wall. Defensive. Like, if you look at their outfield situation, you know, Merrill and Tatis are going to play every day.
Yeah.
And then if you got Hayward and Connor Joe, I could see maybe over a guy like an Eggy Rosario or something having a speedy defensive outfielder who can be your pinch runner. Tyler Wade has some speed, but that's about really it for your for bench speed. Eggy Rosario is not a fast dude. Connor Joe is not a fast dude. Luis Campusano is a catcher, so that's automatically not a fast dude. It definitely feels like you could use another bit of speed. And Forrest Wall, that was the role we had with Atlanta last year. He was the designated pinch runner. I believe he had multiple stolen bases before he had an at-bat to start the year. Like, that's just kind of the usage, and that'd be a good add. Although you can get some base running out of Tyler Wade. I do think he could be better at stealing bases, but either way. Yeah, like, it's this lineup felt like it was one more acquisition away. Maybe one of those NRIs can do it. The pitching staff, they did make the acquisition, though, right? So you got Dylan Cease, Michael King, both in their final years of control. Yu Darvish is signed for the next decade or so. He's 38. I think his deal takes him through like age 42 or something. They brought in Nick Pivetta, so they did pop a qualifying offer there. They also have Kyle Hart, who they signed out of the KBO, 32. He's coming back stateside. And this is because Joe Musgrove is out because of Tommy John. He got hurt in the postseason against Atlanta in the wild card round. And then they've got a ton of starters in AAA on the 40-man roster. Randy Vasquez, knuckleballer Matt Waldron, love a good knuckleball. Johnny Brito, Stephen Kolek, Luis Patino is in camp on an NRI. This feels like it's a very good rotation, provided nobody gets hurt. And they've got to find some time this year to figure out which of those guys, those 40-man roster starters, can step in and take a full season thing next year, because they're at risk of losing both Dylan Cease and Michael King to free agency.
Right, 100%. But yeah, this rotation, man, it's solid, honestly. Because of the fact that three of their top four starting pitchers in this rotation pitched 145 or more innings in 2024, I would put this rotation over the Los Angeles Dodgers rotation, honestly. Plus, you know, Dylan Cease, he's going to post. Michael King's going to post. Yu Darvish is questionable. He had some injury issues last year, and he's pushing 40. So, you know, his health is always an issue. But Nick Pivetta is the other guy that pitched over 145 innings, and he's generally going to post. And the only reason he really didn't qualify for the ERA title last year is because the Red Sox used him out of the bullpen some too, aside from just starting. And so with him primarily focusing on starting with the Padres as their number four starter, he doesn't have that pressure that he had in Boston to be a top-tier pitcher. He can just go out there and eat innings at the back of the rotation and just strike guys out with his gas. And it's a solid one through four. It's just that fifth spot that's kind of questionable at this point.
And at this point, who doesn't have a question for their fifth spot? Like, that's kind of how modern baseball works. Like, Braves fans are freaking out about the fifth spot. I'm like, guys, it's the fifth spot. You don't even use it in the postseason. Like, take it easy. The bullpen, they made a ton of acquisitions on the bullpen in like previous years. A lot of those guys are gone, right? Tanner Scott's out the door. But you look at what they have. Robert Suarez, super weird contract thing. He has like a $10 million option for 26 and all of that, or an opt-out or whatever it is. But Suarez as the closer, 36 saves last year. So many of these dudes put up absurd innings. I think they have five guys who threw 61 or more innings in this pen. And then Brian Hoeing came in via trade last year from Miami. He's their long man. He can kind of swing back and forth between starting in the rotation or between starting in the bullpen. So can Wandy Peralta, by the way. Yep. But like Jason Adam, they got him last summer from Tampa Bay. Jeremiah Estrada, they got him prior to 24 from the from the Cubs. Adrian Morgan is in there as a lefty. Yuki Matsui's a lefty. Wandy Peralta's a lefty. Am I wrong for saying I kind of like this pen? And like, this pen could legitimately be a strength. Am I talking myself into your side of this and saying the Padres are good?
Hey, the San Diego Padres, that's what's in. Yeah, no, the Padres bullpen is strong, man, especially the back end, man. You got Robert Suarez closing games and Jason Adam as a setup man. I mean, that alone is enough to win a bunch of games, and just it's certainly a strength. There's really, I mean, outside of the back of their lineup, like we already talked about, and some of the defensive positioning, this team really doesn't have many weaknesses. It's kind of slept on because they're in the National League West with the Los Angeles Dodgers, and there's really no standing up to the all-around strength of the Los Angeles Dodgers, but the San Diego Padres honestly aren't that far off from the Los Angeles Dodgers.
I mean, they can absolutely give them a run. I think this is one of those teams where, like, everything has to go right.
Yeah.
You know, Bogarts has to rebound. Cronenworth has to rebound. Those, you know, the top guys, your Tatis, your Mariel, your Machado, they all have to be healthy and they have to hit. Tatis needs to find a way to get closer back to that, you know, MVP finisher form that he had prior to the suspension. Kind of makes you wonder. And then they need all of the back end stuff to go well, right? Like right now, they need Ornelas to hit right away, or they need one of those in our eyes to stick on the roster. They need the catchers to be able to perform offensively. Both of them weren't that great. I want to say they both had WRC pluses in like the 80s, the low 80s last year. Like, I feel like the ceiling on this team is pretty high, but the floor is also a little bit lower than maybe the Diamondbacks, because you're in a scenario of one injury in your lineup, one injury in your rotation, and all of a sudden now you have a lot of questions about, like, you have more questions than maybe is ideal for a team competing for a wild card spot. Am I wrong on that, or is that kind of, does that kind of make sense?
No. That certainly makes sense. Yeah, especially in the lineup. Like, I don't see Dylan Cease or Michael King going down with injury. They don't have that history of injuries. But yeah, as far as the lineup goes, they have to have Cronenworth and Bogarts turn it around. And then
Michael King's had two gruesome injuries. Like, let's clarify that real quick. Yeah, like he had a – what was it? He lost his 2022 season from an elbow injury. He's had a couple
oh, wow.
Like, couple significant issues, not recently, but earlier in his career, he did have some severe, you know, some severe injury issues. So like that, I think that is a thing there.
Okay.
But he is away from them enough now where it seems like he could be okay. And Dylan Cease has been absolutely just a workhorse.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot about the Michael King injury.
King had some sort of weird, like, a bone in his elbow, like, shattered. And it's, like, a bone that, like, people don't even really know about. They had to put, like, a plate in his elbow or something. It was wild. But it was also, it wasn't his UCL. It was some sort of, like, a fracture in the elbow. Doesn't happen that often, but it was a weird, fluky kind of thing that I don't think is going to linger, but he has had some injury issues in the past. It's just not recently. Like, a lot of these guys have been healthy recently. Cease has been a workhorse. King's been healthy recently. Darvish had those issues last year. Pivetta's been mostly healthy. So, like, the top of the rotation is the most injury resilient, I think.
Yeah, I completely forgot about those Michael King injuries. But yeah, I do think you're spot on. They have a very high ceiling. It's kind of like the Rangers. We talked about the Rangers last week. They have a high ceiling and a low floor. It's kind of, they need a lot of stuff to go right.
Yeah, and then moving over the Arizona Diamondbacks, I asked which one of these you wanted to do, and you said, do not give me the Diamondbacks. I was like, why did you say that? And you had a very simple response.
I'm a hater, man. I don't think you want to ask me that. I am a hater, so I'm going to just leave it at that.
I was like, okay, sure, I'll take the Diamondbacks. That's perfectly fine. I do think that we sleep on the Diamondbacks because when they play, we're sleeping. Like, it's being out on the West Coast. Guess what team led baseball in runs last year? And I'll give you a hint. It's a team in this division.
The Arizona Diamondbacks.
Yes. The Dodgers, okay, the league average for runs last year was 711. The The three teams broke 800 runs. The Yankees had 815. The Dodgers had 842. The Diamondbacks had 886 runs last year. They were very, very good last year. This offense, they didn't hit, like, home run wise, they were top five in homers. They scored a ton of runs. They've got quite a few guys that can steal bases. They were right there kind of around league average on stolen bases. But they were also pretty efficient with those stolen bases. I think they only had like 30 caught stealing, where everybody else above them was, you know, for the most part, had a lot more caught stealings. But a lot of it is like they had the second most triples in baseball. It's the guys like your Corbin Carrolls, you know, guys who were just speedy. He led baseball in 14 with 14 triples. And you look at what they did for this lineup. They lose Christian Walker. They subtract Jock Peterson. They've replaced Christian Walker with Josh Naylor. They brought, you know, and then Pavin Smith, who kind of in his second updo in the majors, looked really good down the stretch last year. They've got a lot of really good veterans. Ketel Marte at second base. They just extended Geraldo Perdomo at short. Again, Suarez is at third. Final year of team control, they've got top prospect Jordan Lawler going to move from shortstop to third base to replace him. The outfield is Lourdes Gurriel, again, Jake McCarthy, Corbin Carroll. They've got speedy Alec Thomas, and they brought back Randall Grichuk for the bench. Like, I like the lineup, and outside of maybe an injury to Corbin Carroll or Ketel Marte, I like their ability to replace any one player that gets hurt. I do think that's a big deal as well, is they have the depth to weather an injury at just about any position, although it's hard to replace the physical tools of Carroll or Marte. And I think that's an advantage. The ceiling maybe isn't as high on any individual player as it is on San Diego, but I feel like the floor is higher and the depth is better when it comes to this Diamondbacks team.
Yeah, no. They do have a solid lineup. I mean, if you have Corbin Carroll in your lineup, you're going to have a good lineup regardless. But they do have to worry about some injuries. They did take a step back at first base from Christian Walker to Josh Naylor. I do like Josh Naylor, but I still think it's a step back, especially defensively. The rest of the lineup's pretty solid. You do have to worry about the injuries with Ketel Marte, though. He's not as injury prone.
Some recurring stuff, like knee or elbow or something like that. Yeah,
yeah. And he's not as injury prone as Byron Buxton or Royce Lewis or somebody like that. But he hasn't played 150 games this decade. So since 2021, so you do have to worry about that. But it is a solid lineup. I like Randall Grichuk. I'm pretty high on Randall Grichuk. So having him as a bench bat / platoon guy kind of works out nicely, in my opinion. But it's a solid lineup. I don't see it as deep as the San Diego Padres lineup. No, you're good.
I do think that the depth, as far as, like, I went back and looked at some of their inner eyes as well. And, like, they have an answer at just about every single position, right? As far as, you know, like, catcher, Adrian Del Castillo was pretty decent in his first playing time in the majors. Trey Mancini, now that he's fully recovered from that cancer thing that he had, is in camp as a first baseman and corner outfielder. Garrett Hampson, formerly of the Royals, is at second base. They brought in Adarmo Vargas from the Washington Nationals, who could play second or third. Again, Jordan Lawler at shortstop. The outfield, they've got a bunch of guys on the roster already, but then they've brought in AJ Vukovich, Christian Pache, guys like that. I don't think Pache is going to do anything special here. I'm not impressed with Pache or anything. But they outfield depth is where they have the most, because they're carrying five on the everyday rosters, plus a couple guys who can fill in. Pavin Smith can fill in the outfield and stuff as well. Like, I don't quite think I realized until just now, they might be the deepest position player lineup as far as they have a guy who you can see stepping in for any injury that they get. Again, Marte and Carroll are very hard to replace from an offensive and how dynamic they are. But they've got answers at every position if there's an injury, whereas a lot of other teams, you know, your Padres, your Phillies maybe being one of those, don't always have an answer at every position if somebody gets hurt. And I think that's an underrated aspect in modern baseball with load management and the way that injuries come up on guys now.
Yeah, I don't know. As far as depth chart depth goes, they do have that there. But far as like 1 through 9 depth goes, I don't think that their lineup is as deep as the San Diego Padres.
I like the bottom of their lineup better. I like the top of the Padres lineup better. Yeah, I like the Padres have a more dynamic lineup top to bottom, but I do think the floor on the Diamondbacks lineup is maybe higher. The ceiling's not as high.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
The rotation, holy cow. Signing Corbin Burns, they pop a qualifying offer there. But that means you're one through... Zach Gallen is your number two. Their rotation, Corbin Burns, Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, Eduardo Rodriguez, Brandon Pfaadt. Like, I've seen some of the projections. I think the Zips projections have all five of these guys with an ERA under 4, or I think Merrill Kelly's barely over 4. And another scenario, the top of the rotation, Burns and Gallen, that's a fantastic 1-2 punch. But from a 1 through 5 perspective, the floor on this rotation is incredibly high. And I could see a scenario, barring health, because health was an issue for Kelly and Gallen and Rodriguez last year. But barring health, I could see a scenario where 3 of these dudes qualified for the ERA title. And like that's, I don't think any other team's probably going to see 3 guys qualify. Maybe, no, I'm trying to think. I can't think of another rotation. Maybe Philly. Philly might do it. But that's, yeah, I would say your Phillies. But that's about it, I think. Like, this is a very, very robust rotation, both in skill at the top and depth. Brandon Pfaadt as a 5 is very, very good. He struggled from an ERA perspective last year. We saw in the 23 playoffs how good he can be. Was it 23, 22? Yeah. But anyway, just very, very good 1 through 5 as far as high floors on all of these guys.
Yeah, no, the rotation is very solid. I would put it up right up there with the San Diego Padres rotation for sure. Honestly, again, because of health concerns, I have both of these teams' rotations ahead of the Los Angeles Dodgers rotations. But it's the only question for me is Corbin Burns doesn't have much experience pitching in Chase Field. I looked it up. He's only made 2 starts there, and that is a very hitter-friendly park. And so you have to worry about that.
The sight lines are weird out there. Yeah. Like out in the outfield, the first stands you see are like 30 feet up, which is weird. Mm-hmm. It's like that giant massive tower thing for the batter's eye. And I think a lot of the batter's eye is in play. So it's such a weirdly designed ballpark.
Yeah,
but and he's also been one of the best pitchers in baseball in the last couple of years. Like he's gonna adjust.
Oh, right, for sure, 100%. But their ballpark is a big reason of why they scored the most runs in baseball last year. There was a stretch last year where both teams that played at Chase Field were scoring 6-7 runs a game over a couple week stretch last year. It's a high scoring park, so that could be an issue.
The bullpen. Embarrassment of riches here, right? AJ Puck, they acquired him from Miami. He failed as a starter in Miami, but he's been a great reliever, lefty reliever. Justin Martinez as a righty. And then set up Kevin Ginkle. They brought in Kendall Graveman, who's finally healthy. Shelby Miller returned. All he cost them was Dansby Swanson and Ender Inciarte. But Shelby Miller's returned. What's amazing is Kendall Graveman was injured last year. I don't think he pitched at all last year. But the other projected 7 members of the rotation, of the bullpen, including 6th starter Jordan Montgomery, every single one of these guys picked up saves last year. Now, not many, right? Mantiply had 1. Montgomery had 1. Ryan Thompson had 2. But 7 of these projected 8 picked up saves last year. So it's another situation. The depth at the top, Puck and Martinez are both very good. Like they are closer quality back end relievers, but the floor, with the exception of maybe Montgomery because of the struggles he had after getting the late start last year, the floor on a lot of this pen is really high as well. And a lot of these dudes, everybody in this pen, except for Graveman again, because Graveman was hurt last year, everybody in this pen threw 50-something innings or more last year, right? Martinez threw 72. Ginkel threw 70. Like, it's just another situation where the ceiling is high on the back end, but the floor is also very high and just looks to be very consistent.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good problem to have when you have six or seven relievers that you have to decide on which one's going to be closing out a game every night. And so
what is this, the Dodgers?
Right. But yeah, I'm high on AJ Puck. I think he's probably this year going to be their main
primary closer.
Yeah.
Which lefty closer? How often do you see that?
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, the bullpen is very solid and it's going to be a strength for them. And real quick, I did want to clean this up a little bit. At home, their offense had a 798 OPS with 457 runs scored. Away, their offense had a 757 OPS with 429 runs scored.
Wow. And then
pitching at home, they had, this is all pitching, starting in relief, they had a 4.68 ERA at home and a 4.57 ERA on the road.
So, okay. So it's a little bit of a home field bump, but not as bad as we were worried about. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's to me, I think the argument for Padres over Diamondbacks comes down to ceiling versus floor. The Padres have the higher ceiling. They have legitimate superstars. Fernando Tatis Jr. could find that pre-injury, pre-steroid form and pop off for 40 home runs, right? But the Diamondbacks have a higher floor of just about every lineup spot. Like, look at their line. Like, the guys who were in their lineup from last season, everybody put up a WRC plus over 100.
Yeah.
Every single player. Geraldo Perdomo batting ninth had a 101 WRC plus. And so it's a situation where the ceiling may be higher on the top of the Padres lineup, but the floor is higher for the entire Diamondbacks lineup. Pitching staffs, the ceiling's really high on both of them in the front, but I feel like the floor is higher on the back end for the Diamondbacks. And it just comes down to ceiling versus floor. And everybody kind of views that differently. And that's kind of the difference in us is, I'm a believer more in the floor over 162, and you're a believer more in the ceiling when you get to the end of the season and you're in the postseason and one dude can take over a series and win you a postseason series. And perfectly valid takes to have. And I'm kind of curious, what do the listeners think? What do y'all think? Let us know.
Yeah, 100%. And it's going to be crazy at the end of the season when the Dodgers finish the year with a 140-22 record, and then the San Diego Padres and the Arizona Diamondbacks both finish at 90-72.
It's going to be so annoying for us. We're like, "Wait a second, what the heck's going on here? How do we figure this out? Let us know what you think. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when we drop the next episode. We're talking about the Dodgers tomorrow. We'll round up the rest of the news from the week. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.